Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Black grief and black death are among the most important forces in contemporary American politics, according to our next guest. Shatima Threadcraft argues in the new book, The Labors of Resurrection, spectacular death experienced publicly and violently has given rise to global political movements, but it has also had an important gendered effect that has complicated black women's relationship to the black people. Though black women face a crisis of premature death, they are unlikely to experience violence in public ways. Their deaths are most often instances of intimate partner violence and occur in private when most large-scale black political mobilization centers on deaths that are spectacular. Threadcraft highlights how the centrality of spectacular death has functioned to marginalize black women in the stories of black peoplehood and has ensured that they are not the main beneficiaries of large-scale black political mobilization. Shatima Threadcraft is an associate professor of gender and sexuality studies at Vanderbilt University. The new book is The Labors of Resurrection, Black Women, Necromancy, and the Morrisonian Democracy. It is published by Oxford University Press. And we welcome Shatima Threadcraft to the roundtable this morning. Thank you so much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to this subject in the sense of just that title, The Labors of Resurrection? There is a lot in this book. There are a lot of topics that swirl and combine. And I'm curious as to your framing and deciding how that was going to take shape.
Oh, yeah, thank you. That's a great question. I had a friend of mine when I taught at Rutgers University who pointed out that though there was a statistic going around that a black man was killed every 28 hours by a police officer or security guard, she said that she had calculated that black woman was killed every 21 hours by an intimate partner. And I was really surprised by that. And from that, got invited to take part in a roundtable of scholars thinking about black politics after Baltimore, after Ferguson. And my contribution to that was to write about this crisis of intimate partner violence and eventually come to think about it through the concept of femicide. So that got me started on the project.
Give us a definition of femicide and how you look at that and how it is, beginning with a definition.
Yes. Okay. So scholars have defined, beginning with Diana Russell in the 1970s, sort of, but eventually hit upon the definition of the murder of women because they are women. And in this book, I talk about black femicide as a specific instance of it. So that would be the murder of black women because they are black women, or the murder of black women because they are women, facilitated by kind of structural issues like housing insecurity or medical neglect. And the UN model protocol for the investigation, the UN Latin American model protocol for the investigation of gender-related killings, defines both active and passive femicide. So active femicide is the intentional killing of a woman, but passive is sort of abortion access related and botched abortion deaths and maternal mortality. So I talk about both sort of active and passive black femicide as things that are going on in the United States.
You talk in the book of, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, but it seems that this starts to come onto the radar in the 1970s at a point where we start to realize that this is going on.
Yes. Is that the question?
Well, I'll add more to it, which is, so what does that say about that time and even where we have come from then? Because obviously many of the forces that were in play then are still in play now. But what was it about that time that started to show that movement, as so much else was happening, especially in the black community?
Okay, yeah, I got it now. Yes, so this was a big period in organizing against violence against all women, and then I think black women organizing against violence against Black women as well. So people were coming together to name sort of these sorts of forces as a political problem and not just a private matter in relationships. So when the Combahee River Collective starts organizing against the murder of Black women in Boston in 1979, there are already sort of, you know, multiracial feminist groups and sort of Black anti-violence groups organizing against police brutality. So there are sort of these formations of people organizing against violence in that period that women, that this Black women's group is able to be at the intersection of.
We should know that that group was started by Barbara Smith, who lives here in Albany and a former member of our panel on this program, and certainly someone who has contributed a great deal to our community and our discussions. I'm curious from that of what was to use the term radar again, of what was on her radar that has continued to look at this as something that is that needs attention and why it is not getting the attention that it deserves.
Yeah, that's a complex question, and you that's very cool that Barbara Smith is a part of your. I mean, I'm really kind of marveling at that. But you know, one of the things that I hope I was able to demonstrate is just her conceptual clarity and her innovation as a thinker. So she had she and the Combahee River Collective had written their statement, which, you know, if you know, a general college or high school student reads anything about Black feminism, chances are they will read their statement. And so they had written that about 2 years before these murders started to happen. And I think one thing is that the murders kind of, there's a way in which they're organizing around these murders made them kind of an important Black feminist group, right? So that they became iconic via what they saw in these murders. But it sort of became a proof of concept of what they had been already thinking about, right? So they saw, and Smith in particular, saw everything that she had been thinking about happening in the media coverage, right, in the police response, in the response among Black communities, and not prioritizing and not understanding sexual violence and sexism as a driving factor, but really thinking that race was the only thing going on. So it was, you know, she was just visionary, I think is all that can be said about why she was able to see things so clearly.
Barbara Smith is certainly written about in this book, as is Clementine Barfield and Mamie Till Bradley, Ida B. Wells. These are individuals that you point out of looking at how Black women are marginalized in the story of Black culture, and that when it comes to mobilization and Black political mobilization, that Black women, it's more symbolic and not real. They are sidelined.
Yes. So part of what I wanted to pay or point out, the irony of the fact that they had done so much for us to understand the problems of premature death, but Black women as a whole don't benefit from these things. So that doesn't stop them from sort of taking up and dealing with the problem of premature death in Black politics. And I really wanted to show that even if we don't always recognize their work or recognize what happens to them, that they are out there and that there are amazing women who are really trying to push us on understanding that. And that both historically and today, and I hope these things came through, that there are lots of contemporary activists, but, you know, iconically Ida B. Wells, and I think we would not, Emmett Till is the most famous lynching that has happened in this country, and that, you know, there were many, many other people who were tragically lynched, but everyone can recall Emmett Till because of the visual rhetoric and work that his mother did. Right. And it's important to highlight that and understand that these things don't just happen. People come together and do a lot of work so that they sort of seem apparent to us, right? And just a matter of fact. Clementine Barfield, after her son was tragically murdered, did tremendous organizing for the parents and families and communities of murdered children in Detroit. I mean, the week people were coming to visit her in mourning, but already asking her what she was going to do. And instead of saying, "You're crazy, I just lost a child," she got up and did a great deal, you know.
You used the term just a moment ago of that that pushing back. For you and for the women that you write about in the book, what does pushing back look like? What is pushing back that works and that is successful? What does that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, many women have approached this in many different ways, and I won't say, you know, I guess, say that any way of pushing back is wrong, but women have done police and media reform, right? And thinking that their primary levels of activism should be around making the police care or making the media care. There are other people that have done data activism, right? We have to get better numbers. And I should say that when my friend told me about the Black woman murdered every 21 hours, it turns out that's not right, that the number was closer to 6 at a point. And we know that because of the data activism of Rosa Page. And then there's Aisha Reynolds Tyler, who's a journalist and narrative justice worker in Chicago, whose work won a Pulitzer Prize for challenging the ways in which the Chicago Police Department collected data and often refused to collect data about missing Black people in Chicago and Black women in particular. And then there are people, I talk about several armed self-defense trainers, right, and including a woman who is committed to teaching 1 million Black women how to use guns in their own defense, and a doula who, because of the risk, the acute risk of Black women during pregnancy to intimate partner and fatal intimate partner violence, does armed self-defense training as a part of her birth justice work. And then finally, there are people who believe that the criminalization approach to violence against women just escalates violence against women, and therefore have opted for community accountability and mutual aid-based solutions, and don't think that calling the police is going to help, and in fact think that it in general tends to hurt. So that's the sort of contemporary story. But then, you know, you have Ida B. Wells, who combined data activism and pioneered in the use of social science statistics to make an argument against lynching, right? You have the visual work that I said that Emmett Till's mother Mamie did, the forms of organizing for and in the interests of sex workers of people like Margaret Prescott, and arguing for the decriminalization of sex work to decrease violence against Black women. And then the kind of, you know, community activism. Melinda Price says that Clementine Barfield and So Sad pioneered urban gardening and other things. So people have taken a variety of approaches, and there's not just one.
Going back to what you just said regarding some of the contemporary approaches, mm-hmm. I was struck in the book because you're writing about, there's a section on armed self-defense, but you mentioned mm-hmm. Rosa Page and had an Instagram page called Black Femicide US. But these are efforts, whether it be done by Tig Davis or by others. You mentioned the mm-hmm. doula, My Sister's mm-hmm. Keeper Defense. These are all things that are incredible efforts. But what really struck me in the book is how they are I don't want to use the word popular. What is the word I'm looking for? But how they strike a chord with people, and that they are utilized, and that they are something that are very much needed within the community. And I in looking at that, as you say, that simply that you to quote the book, I realized I had to become my own savior. I started teaching other women how to defend themselves mm-hmm. using firearms. My ultimate goal is to teach 1 million women how to defend themselves with firearms. I mean, that tells us of the severity of the problem, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. And I am not, while it might not be a scalable issue, if no one else is coming to defend you, and it's between you and them, who am I to say that you shouldn't have that as a tool in your toolbox, right? And I mean, I do think that it becomes stark. It recalls, I think, some organizing and some women's ways of thinking about it in the 1970s. And I think really, I don't know how better to dramatize the argument that they have a self to defend, which I think is part of the subtext of other things, that men's lives matter more is a part of what's going on in the violence. And I think they are kind of inarguably asserting otherwise, right? In a way that you can't argue around, you know, kind of try me if you think I don't believe that my life is more valuable than yours and that there's nothing to negotiate about it in the moment.
I would think in the list of professions that would be almost impossible in this time, in this moment in our history of being a professor of gender and sexuality studies.
Yeah.
Bless you, Shatima. Bless you. How, even as you're working on the book, I assume like you finish it and then things get worse, right? I mean, it just seems like, oh God, now what?
Yeah, it's hard not to take it a bit personally, which is ludicrous, right? But what I've told people, and when I get this question, is that the students want to know things, and the students really much, my students have not changed. They are curious. You know, I have many guys who are, you know, maybe you would think stereotypically fratty or whatever and wouldn't right. be interested in this at all. And they're like, no, you know, because this problem is so deep, you know, they have an aunt, they have a sister, you know, like, I didn't know anything about this, and thank you. So I have found that, you know, whatever the forces outside my classroom, the students in my classroom want to know and are thankful to know. And I mean, we are talking about, you know, with the data activism, a project of trying to make sure sometimes that you don't know, right? And so they kind of understand that part too.
This is such a powerful book and so important. It is The Labors of Resurrection, Black Women, Necromancy, and Morrisonian Democracy. It is published by Oxford University Press. Shatima Threadcraft, Associate Professor of Gender and Sexuality Studies at Vanderbilt University, is the author. Shatima, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Labors of Resurrection, Black Women, Necromancy, and Morrisonian Democracy. Shatima Threadcraft is the author. It is published by Oxford University Press. We'll continue with our last half hour of the roundtable after this news break from the BBC.